Now, we have been doing a little bit of teaching lately on some interesting subjects. Interesting subjects. Now, you remember on December 30th, 75, when Landsat 2, that ERTS satellite, took that photograph 500 miles up and found those 8 dots down in the Amazonian jungle of Peru. When they flew low level over the jungle, it turned into 12 pyramids the size of the one in Egypt. An old Airy was making that exploration under the sea and found that pyramid under the sea, the Bermuda Triangle, and it was sucking things in and opening on the top, out, down below. Then Dr. Brown was swimming. He looked back and he saw that pyramid reflected in the sun. And he saw an opening in the Bermuda Triangle. And the thing was about 100 feet higher than the one in Egypt. And he saw an opening and he swam in. Saw that crystal in a pair of metal hands and he grabbed the crystal. Very smart. Swam out. Remember that? And the candidate for the mayor in Orlando, Florida, was flying low level, looking for wrecks underneath the water. Suddenly saw a stirring in the water. The water began to part. And he saw the pyramid. Remember that? And then, come over here, Ron. Now, we can get back to some of this. We just joined Los Angeles and San Diego. We already were in Los Angeles on 99.5 FM. And we were already in the Valley on Valley Cable. But now we've just joined Channel 18 in San Diego. All over. And I was going to stop and have music because I thought we were going to be interrupted. But we've been interrupted anyway. So you might as well go back. Los Angeles is used to me. Now, that mayor, candidate for Atlanta, was flying low over the Bermuda Triangle. And he saw hold on a minute, I think I can find it. I'm sure nobody in Texas is interested in this. They'll get interested. Now, this is probably the finest book to come out in recent years on Atlantis. Charles Berlitz had written an earlier one. He's of the language school fame. This is his most recent one, Atlantis, the Eighth Continent. There are over 5,000 books on Atlantis. Charles Berlitz, author of the Bermuda Triangle. It's good because it summarizes, and Berlitz is a good writer. We've been reading sections of it. The relevance to what we teach is who built the pyramid. Now, I was teaching on the pyramid when I left Dallas. I have news for you folks in Dallas. I stopped and haven't gone any further till I got you back. So you haven't missed much on the pyramid. Would you go along with that, folks, to your frustration? Now I'm starting to get back on the pyramid, that marvelous wonder that could not be built by any modern construction firm in the world. Perfectly aligned to true north. In fact, when they found it was a little bit off, they discovered it was because the earth shifted. Encased in its measurements 4,000 plus years ago, many plus, I think, the circumference of the earth, the distance to the sun, the average height above sea level of the land masses of the earth, the exact point on the globe. It ought to be the meridian, not Greenwich, because it's exactly at the point on the globe where latitude and longitude crisscross and cover the largest portion of the landmass of the Earth. It encased in its measurements the distance from the Earth to the Sun. It encased in its measurements the building unit of the universe. Now modern science can do it. You take the globe and you divide the hypothetical line from the North Pole to the South Pole into 500 million equal units. You will have what's called the pyramid inch. Some, and I'm one of those, call it the sacred inch because it's used uniquely in the building of the Ark of the Covenant, in the building of Solomon's temple, and Ezekiel, when he gives the design of the temple to be built during the millennium, he specifically says the long cubit. Make sure it's the long cubit, not the short cubit. Approximately the distance from elbow to index finger's tip, which varies with the length of the arm. The exact sacred cubit is 25 pyramid inches. And the pyramid inch, encased in three places as the measuring unit of the pyramid, is exactly 1/500 millionth of the diameter of the Earth pole to pole. Two other places you find that inch: America and Britain. The British inch and the American inch that people try to change into the metric system. And the metric system was based upon measuring from pole to equator around the circumference of the globe, and thus incorporated error. The perfect building block of the universe is that sacred inch, 1/500 millionth of the polar diameter of the Earth. The British inch and the American inch, somebody brought it there. We take measurements for granted. Somebody started it. They've deviated a half a hair's breadth from the pyramid inch. Encased in the measurements of the pyramid, all 3 years, the solar year, the sidereal year, the anomalistic year, the point of revolutions as we go around the sun, the time it takes to return to perihelion, the exact distance where we're closest to the sun in the elliptical orbit, and that point where in going around the sun you return to a certain star in the heavens. Now the North Star now is Polaris. When the pyramid was built, it was Thuban, which means subtle in the dragon constellation. All of the pyramids, I'm telling you, going out the gate, are copies. They were made burial places. The Great Pyramid of Giza was never intended to be a burial ground. And how they built it, lifting 70-ton rocks and fitting them until it would take modern optical instruments to do the fitting in some cases, and cementing them with a cement that modern science has not yet developed, that could cement horizontal vast expanses of the stones as they jointed together, and still hold today. We have no way of building that pyramid. And you know, people still come up with crazy ideas, like they find a hair somewhere and they say it was poured cement, as if you don't know the difference between limestone and granite and poured cement. Some people aren't just born stupid, they work to be stupid. This pyramid couldn't be built today. Whomever built it knew the heavens. And encased in it, Josephus said in the first century, that the descendants of Seth built two monuments. Knowing the catastrophe was hitting the earth, they built two monuments. One of brick and one of stone to encase the knowledge they wanted to preserve past the cataclysm. And in the first century, Josephus says, the one of brick is gone. The one of stone stands to this day in the land of Syria, speaking of the dog star worshipped by Egypt, a colloquial and common expression for the land of Egypt. The Egyptian Book of the Dead, long undeciphered, called that because there were scrolls buried with the dead people. When the Rosetta Stone was discovered, and when Champollion broke hieroglyphics, and it was discovered these are not paintings on the sides of caves, but an alphabet. And when they began to read the hieroglyphics, they could translate the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and they found that Egypt has always viewed that pyramid as a prophetic instrument that portrayed the descent of the human soul and the ascent, the way back to the resurrection chamber and to eternal life. They took the passages and broke them into units, explained them. It's always been viewed that way, and they call it the Pillar of Enoch. Now, in those passages of the pyramid, as we've taught on it in the past, and I have a book that I gave away, I don't want to give it away tonight. I don't want to have to tie the phones up, unless I get soft. But unless I say I'm going to do it, no, you can't have it. But in the pyramid are descending passages and ascending passages. There is a benchmark that lines up once through some 22,000 years that pinpoints a specific date in the pyramid when Orion, the Pleiades, and Alcyone, these constellations in the vault of the heavens roll by. And every 2,000 years, a different constellation and a different star moves into the position of being true north. And true north has nothing to do with magnetic north. You take a rum line and take the pole of the earth from south to north and just shove it right on out there in space, and it'll hit on the vault of the heavens a certain star, and that's true north. Polaris is there now. Thuban, as I've said, meaning subtle. And the dragon constellation, the symbol of the devil, was the North Star in those days. And the descending passage was so perfectly aligned that on a given day and a given year, you stand at the bottom of the passage and the light of that star would shine all the way down that passage. And a certain benchmark crosshair, scored lines built on the descending passage, line up with Alcyone and the Pleiades, and a dating system is set up 1 year for an inch that perfectly marks the exodus of Egypt, or the Israelites out of Egypt, perfectly marks the birth of Christ, perfectly marks the resurrection of Christ, perfectly marks the entrance into the First World War, perfectly marks the length of the First World War, and right on into the King's Chamber. Now, people have made mistakes, as they have with biblical prophecy. They've set dates. And Davidson, the giant who went to prove there was no prophetic meaning in the pyramid, wrote the most convincing proof that there was a prophetic meaning, but he was so overwhelmed, he set 1936 as you come out of the passage into the King's Chamber as the end of the world, and because it didn't happen, his overkill in that regard turned people off. The next greatest scholar was Rutherford, who set 1979 as the end of the world because suddenly limestone floor changed to granite, and he decided God wouldn't have a prophetic pattern on granite. Totally arbitrary. And again, all of his research in four volumes falls into a certain disrepute because he set a date. Well, people have been doing that since the Brother of the Lord and Augustine, with the Bible setting dates and being wrong. But nobody abandons the Bible because some have misused it. The pyramid is God's prophetic message in stone. It doesn't change the Bible. It is a confirmation, as God wrote his message in the stars also. And there's a new interest in this marvelous monument, and people are beginning to understand that Isaiah 19:19, a prophecy of the last days, says that at the center of Egypt and at the border thereof, and Egypt's the only land in the world you could say that about, because there is Upper and Lower Egypt, the ancient pharaohs wore different colored hats, whether they ruled Upper Egypt, Lower Egypt, or both of them. And right on the Giza Plateau, which means edge, stands this pyramid. The Bible says in Isaiah 19:19, that in the last days there will be a witness, an altar, and altars can be monuments of witness as well as places to offer sacrifice, an altar to the Lord in the last days as a witness. There can only be one thing there. And the question we've asked, is this wonder of the ages, the last of the great seven wonders of the world that exist, is it God's prophetic plan in stone that will enable him in the last days, right there in the center and at the border of Egypt, to say, I told you so? If you argue with the Bible about its translations, inches are inches. The pyramid has got its measuring units built in. Now, who built it is the question we've been asking. The Christ triangle in the pyramid, you lay it on the north face of the pyramid and follow that triangle, degrees, rum line, it hits Bethlehem. You go to the great stone circle, Stonehenge in Britain, and you draw the marker stones and just crisscross from the northwest corner marker stone of the Stonehenge circles and the outer ditch embankment with the post holes there, and the marker stones, there are four of them, you draw from the northwest to the southeast one and keep the rum line going and swim right across the Mediterranean, it hits the pyramid right on the nose. Now, who built these monuments? Did Enoch? Now, some say it was built during Cheops' reign. This is one thing I've started to do, I didn't do, while in Dallas. And that was to prove, and I haven't yet done it yet, I just said I will prove it. One of the great arguments that it was built during Cheops' reign is that Herodotus, the Greek historian, said it was built during Cheops' reign. Well, how do you know? He took the word of a priest in Egypt whose business it was to support what the Pharaoh said. Now, the other support is the kernel of ice found in the chambers above the king's chamber, hieroglyphics. I'll prove to you there were forgeries. There are no markings in the pyramid except that little hieroglyphic with the cartouche of Cheops in the upper chambers that Colonel Weiss found. He did it as a fraud, and his forger ended up owning one of the better hotels of the day near the pyramid. I've dared to say that I believe Enoch built it, and that he had some help with those watchers, as the apocryphal book tells us. And I have dared to say that I am with Isaac Vail, the Pasadena scholar, that the earth that was before the flood had a canopy. Opened to the north and to the south of the poles, but there was a canopy. And the firmament was between. There was water above as well as water on the earth. And that before the flood, in the ages that were past, I believe Atlantis existed. And poor old Edgar Cayce, like him or lump him, who talked in his sleep, and people wrote it down, and it was called readings, said in 68 or 69, Atlantis would rise. Not that the kingdom of Atlantis would rise, but there would be around Bimini and in the Caribbean, you would find remnants of Atlantis. It was in 68 that Dr. Valentine began his explorations and discovered these giant stones with cornerstones, what apparently was the upper portion of a causeway they should begin to dig underneath. And these other strange happenings in the Bermuda Triangle. Now, if Atlantis sunk, and Otto Muck's theory is kind of interesting. Otto Muck has the sinking of Atlantis occur with a breakup of plugs in these shifting continents that drift on each side. of the central Atlantic plateau that was above, take a picture if you will, above the water at that time, and the plugs blew out, and this Atlantic plateau in Automuck's theory sank below the surface, leaving the Azores and the Canaries and other islands above the sea, and sunk, and the plugs filled in again. His theory is that Atlantis was right here to explain why the eels still swim from the Seaweed Sea off the coast of Brazil and south of Florida all the way to Europe and then underneath the Gulf Stream back again for the marriage as they mate 2 years later. Those on the west side swim a little ways to fresh waters in the Americas. Were these eels seeking the fresh waters of Atlantis? Not there anymore. Why do birds, as some have seen, fly out to sea with an instinct, searching a land that isn't there, and drop to their death? I am a believer. I won't tantalize you. I'm a believer in Atlantis, and that a great civilization existed there. Now, in and around the Bermuda Triangle, strange things have been surfacing for years, but the remnants of a possible human structure have been surfacing in recent years since 1968. Now, if you'll let me bore you again, I will read these little things for Dallas, okay? Can I bore you? Here is the Greek industrialist, Harry Marshall, on an expedition in 1978. He remembers some of the details, seeking television footage of a pyramidal mound off of Kaysaw Bank at a depth of over 750 feet in the Bermuda Triangle. The first thing we noticed when we got near the area was that all the compasses were going berserk. We spent 8 hours making tapes. Starting at 700 feet to 1,500 feet deep, we would go about a mile and make a 90-degree turn and go back again. Finally, I saw it coming up on the sonar screen. I'm reading Atlantis, the Eighth Continent by Charles Berlitz. I told the captain to stop and then to proceed slowly. If you don't have this in your own bookstore, we got it. $16.95, about $18 in cover mailing. Finally, I saw it coming up on the sonar screen. I told the captain to stop and then to proceed slowly. We were right over the pyramid. The top seemed to be about 150 feet from the surface, with the total depth about 650 feet. We lowered the camera, and high-intensity lights down the side of the mass, and suddenly came to an opening. Light flashes or shining white objects were being swept into the opening by turbulence. They may have been gas or some sort of energy crystals. Further down, the same thing happened in reverse. They were coming out again at a lower level. It was surprising that the water in this deep area was green instead of black near the pyramid, even at night. Now, Dr. Brown, swimming, it was in this very area, southwest of the Kaysaw Bank, that in 1977, a huge pyramid was reported as having appeared in outline on the depth finder of a boat during a deep sea fishing trip. That's what Harry Marshall was seeking. Dr. Brown went swimming. Ray Brown, diver and lecturer of Mesa, Arizona. You've heard this before, but I'd like to fit it together again. As we swam on, he says, the water became clearer. I was close to the bottom at 135 feet and was trying to keep up with the diver ahead of me. I turned to look toward the sun through the murky water and saw a pyramid shape shining like a mirror. About 35 to 40 feet from the top was an opening. Now, the point I'm making is somebody knew how to build these things, and ain't nobody found out yet. Now, isn't it interesting that in one of the reputed areas of Atlantis, now they've located, some theorists put Atlantis in Heligoland, some put it in the Antarctic. There's been a big argument to put it in the Mediterranean, the Isle of Terra. Some put it in the Sahara Desert. Why do you think they call the Atlantic Ocean Atlanta? Atlantic. Why are the Atlas Mountains on the coast of Africa? There's a heavy concentration of scholars who want to put it in South America on the east coast. Well, I'm sure that Atlantis touched all of these if it existed. And I'm contending that from Atlantis came the skills to build the pyramid. I'm contending that it was on Atlantis that the Garden of Eden was. And it was on Atlantis that the Tree of Life was. And it was from Atlantis. Let's go on. Interesting that in this area, if Atlantis is here, you find pyramids. I turned to look toward the sun through the murky water and saw a pyramid shape shining like a mirror. About 35 to 40 feet from the top was an opening. Dr. Brown says, I was reluctant to go inside. But I swam in anyway. The opening was like a shaft debouching into an inner room. I saw something shining. It was a crystal held by two metallic hands. I had on my gloves and I tried to loosen it. The man had guts. It became loose. As soon as I grabbed it, I felt this was the time to get out and not come back. Smart man. He still has that crystal. The author of this book speaks of examining it. The author of this book says he doesn't know whether it's psychosomatic or real, but you feel in your hand when you hold it a throbbing sensation in the hand of the holder. Now, the candidate for the mayor's office in Orlando, Florida. Can I read this again? I'll get to some new stuff for you folks tonight. I was about 45 miles northeast of Miami and flying at about 250 feet above sea level when a hissing... Hey, I'm not going to cram Atlantis down anybody's throat. I don't care whether anybody believes anything that I believe. I just feel you ought to be forewarned. I hate an objective historian. I want to know where the boy stands. And I know how to watch for his opinion, his facts, and see if he knows the difference. Now, I've come to believe Atlantis existed. The Bible says the earth that then was, there wasn't any rain. And until somebody comes up with a better theory, Isaac Bale's canopy theory is the best explanation I can come up with. Firmament means expanse. And I know there was water up there as well as on the earth. And that when the flood came, if you believe the Bible, that overhead container of water, whatever it was, burst. And the fountains of the deep gushed up. People lived a long time, were awful smart. And one wonders, they began to die, lifespan shortened immediately after the flood. Was that because the canopy was gone? Sun's rays have an aging effect upon you. They were protected before the flood. Now, as smart as we are, you know how smart we'd be if we lived 900 years? Do you realize what a criminal thing it is to waste youth on youth? Man, if I could take my head and put it in a young body. You ever felt that way? I know I've gotten 10 times smarter the last year than I did the previous year. It compounds. You know, the gestalt takes over you. You begin to interweave the various things you know. I mean, I just get so thrilled when I think about how smart I'd be if I could live 900 years. Smart people like you. This genius church we're building. My Lord, would be smart. These people live 900 years. And as I said last week, I read the good old Art Tanakh series, probably the best Jewish commentary in recent years, on those passages in Genesis where it says the sons of God came down and saw the daughters of women were beautiful and fiddly-dee and produced monsters, giants. Now in good Jewish scholarship, they said there are three choices. Descendants of Seth married the descendants of Cain. One. That's foolish. Both Seth and Cain carried the genes of Adam and Eve in them. Plus, Noah married Canaan's daughter. Second, it means the rulers married the peons, horse feathers. Then, rather hesitantly, they said, or it means what it says. Some supernatural, more than natural as we know it, came down and got involved with the women of the earth, what the Bible says, that it was giants. Now, if you read the apocryphal literature, Book of Jubilees, Book of Enoch, Book of Jasher, you'll find in some of them references to what are called watchers, and that Enoch dwelt with the watchers. Now, if Enoch was sent from Atlantis to build this monument in stone that God might preserve a record for this day, and if he had these watchers to help him as his construction crew, I don't have any trouble then figuring out how these superhuman beings built that pyramid, moved those rocks around. But like all construction crews, on their weekends off, they got involved with the women of this earth. Every ancient hieroglyphic has the symbol of the mountain as the place you find God. Every ancient religion has it. As time goes on, it's incorporated in the myths of every nation. You have Mount Olympus in Greece as a type. But all ancient cultures go to a mountain to find God. Was Atlantis constructed in such a way that the highest point on Atlantis somehow went through the firmament and through that canopy? Or did they come from the north? There's an ancient tradition that heaven is north. Not magnetic north necessarily, but if the canopy broke, and at the northern rim of the canopy you would see out to the blue sky and the stars, access from heaven would be through that funnel or through a mountain that pierced the canopy. Those watchers got here, those sons of God got here from somewhere. Now the Dogon people in Central Africa worship a star you can't see, as you well know, Sirius B, which they say is the place of heaven. There's some mysteries here that can't be explained. Now, I'm sure the search will be dealing with what I'm dealing with next. Every time I get on it, they get on it. I want them to be sure to do it right, not butchered up like they did the Dogon people. But if Atlantis existed, when it was buried, maybe some strange things were buried with it. Now, nobody can explain the Bermuda Triangle. Is there some source down there of power? I was about 45 miles northeast of Miami, this fellow said, flying at about 250 feet above sea level, when a hissing, smashing updraft hit me. It bounced the plane about 1,000 feet upward. Now, I've been in updrafts and downdrafts, but nothing like this. after I got back to more or less normal, I noticed that the water had become bright and silvery. I noticed something big under the water. Thought it was a wrecked ship. It was not far from the surface. Something was causing the water to rush past it at a fast rate. It curled around it, made a deep channel. We're in the Bermuda Triangle now. The ocean seemed to be opening up, and I was now flying low in a sort of trough in the water with both sides of it along the wingtips. I suddenly realized that what I was looking at was not a ship at all, but seemed to be a huge building down in the water. The water seemed to get shallower around it. I could see a slanting side of a building that looked like a mountain. I was down at about 50 feet from the surface and could see it in the water. I circled around it for about a minute and a half. I could even see barnacles on it and water running past the top of it. That'll scare four pilots fitless. At my point of angle and from my position, I could clearly see it was a monstrous building. The sun was radiating in such a way that in its rays I could see this huge building clearly visible down under the water. I thought I saw other buildings around it, but I couldn't see them well. The one I was looking at must have been 100 to 250 feet high, according to the pattern I could get. I started to time myself on the leg out to get readings of the location when out of this blue, clear day, another strange incident occurred. All my magnetics had gone to zero. Then a strange hue occurred all around me. Now, Columbus saw a strange glow as he approached these islands. Something some historians fail to tell you. At about 600 feet above water in the air, that bright crimson hue simply baffled me. That 240 horsepower Continental began to be the most crazily running engine I have ever had the experience to feel. It became motionless. No matter what I did with the throttle and pumps, it glided and floated smoothly for at least 2 miles. Then the engine simply started itself. I couldn't dive because I was already on top of the water. Then I realized that some force was pulling toward a westerly direction. Now, after all this, I finally got back to the airport with my Bendix blasting hell out of everybody, but not a single band would respond. After landing and getting inspection of radio communication and units, every last unit was blown. Shorted out with some high-frequency electronic shock or mysterious high voltage in the air. They said I might have run through a magnetic belt or something. Now, over the past years, this is the candidate for mayor in Orlando, Florida. Over the past years, he says, I've been back many times, but I could never sight it again. He says, a lot of damned Miamians made fun of my story. It's awful to be alone when you see something like that. But I know I'm right. And he's talking to Dr. Valentine, who has, after 16 years exploration, come across these structures beneath the sea near Bimini and in the Bermuda Triangle area. And he's talking to him. He says, a lot of damn Miamians made fun of my story, but I know I'm right. You've hit with the sonar instruments the very object I talked about in exactly the same area. Now, am I boring you? We've got to get back to some of these, don't we? October 21st, 1962, was the 50th wedding anniversary of Anthony and Emma Hessler of Fort Lauderdale. To celebrate, they took a 3-day cruise to Nassau aboard the SS Florida. The big white cruise ship sailed from Miami at about 5:15 p.m. on Friday, October 19th. Holding hands, the Hesslers stood at the rail on the promenade deck, looking back at the vessel's wake and the Miami skyline. Now I'm reading The Devil's Triangle 2 by Richard Weiner. He wrote The Devil's Triangle. This is number 2, second book. Strange. Have you caught on? Now, Dallas wouldn't, because I'm just with them, though they catch on fast. Have you caught on what I'm trying to do? That there are strange things that go on in the Bermuda Triangle that nobody has explained. Now, my purpose in teaching is there is no ability to understand the great mysteries of this earth without a knowledge of the Bible taught right. idea that you park your brains at the door of a church when you walk in, and the spirituality is synonymous with ignorance. That's what I'm against. I'm on a crusade to prove there aren't going to be any dummies in heaven. That's why I like Dallas. It's full of smart people, like Fort Worth, smart people. The sky was cloudless. The sea was flat, calm. The only wind was that created with the ship's movement. At approximately 7 o'clock, the Hesslers, bless their sweet hearts, sat down at their table in the dining room for their evening meal. They had just been served their soup and salad when suddenly Emma Hessler found herself sitting on the deck, covered with her food. Trays of food were flying across the room. Chairs, tables, food, and people were sliding across the dining room. The ship had suddenly listed 45 degrees to the port. Then, slowly, very slowly, that's where we were when I left it the last time, isn't it? Okay? Now let's find another. I just want you to see strange things. Let's leave that one right there. If I didn't dangle something, you'd be mad. Although the United States Coast Guard can usually offer some sort of logical explanation for many of the strange happenings in the Devil's Triangle, their own vessels are not immune to them. The USCGC, that's United States Coast Guard cutter Yamacraw, was a former World War II mine layer converted by the Coast Guard. Am I boring you now? Because you heard this. But don't you think we ought to make other people suffer like you did?
Yeah.
Okay. You've got to get a little tension into this. Strange things go on. My advice is don't take a honeymoon or an anniversary in the Bermuda Triangle. Do what you want, but Yamacraw was a former World War II mine layer converted by the Coast Guard to a combination cable laying and research ship. On August 8, 1956, the Yamacraw was on a heading of 165 degrees. Now, the 189-foot ship was under the command of William D. Strouch. Her normal complement was 51. Now, this is the boat that had a white hull. No, a white superstructure and a black hull. August 8, 1956, the Yamacraw was on a heading of 165 degrees. Her position was 30 degrees 65 north and 73.80 west, which placed her in what is sometimes referred to as the Sargasso Sea, which is seaweed sea. Being translated, an area north and east of the Bahamas, approximately 500 miles east of Jacksonville. It was 0130 hours when the radio operator, or rather the radar operator, called out, "Large landmass dead ahead, range 28 miles. "Impossible," responded Ensign Francis J. Flynn.
This is the end of Side 1.